Today, I am happy to welcome Dr. Christina Castagnini. Christina is a licensed psychologist, certified eating disorder specialist, and the host of the Behind the Bite podcast. She's also part of our shared Los Angeles Tribune podcast network. Through Christina's private practice called Freedom to Wellness Counseling, she helps adults heal the relationship with food, body image, and self-worth, all with compassion and depth. Blending over 20 years of clinical experience with her own lived recovery, Dr. Christina brings a grounded, hopeful voice to conversations that truly matter. I just love the work she's doing and the heart she brings to it. So let's welcome Dr. Christina. Hi.
Hello, Alana. That was really wonderful. Thank you.
But it was all true.
Oh, you're so very nice, and I'm so happy to be here.
Wonderful. So am I. We have a lot in common.
We
So,
do.
tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get, I mean, you have a PhD in psychology and a master's in what is it?
Clinical psychology.
Framework.
Yeah, it's an emphasis of marriage and family therapy. So,
Oh, beautiful.
yeah, so it's a nice blend, I think, being able to work with, I mostly work with couples and then, as you mentioned, eating disorders. So it's a nice blend.
Of the two, do you have a favorite? Just curious.
Yeah, I think I didn't want to specialize in eating disorders ever because I had had my own eating disorder, as you mentioned. I had the lived experience. And I said, I'd always heard this myth throughout my training, like, oh, psychologists bring their own stuff into the room and they make it all about them. And I was like, I'm never going to be accused of that. So I was like, I'm going to steer clear from that, and not touch that with a 10-foot pole. So it's really interesting. I ended up specializing in that as down the line. So it's not like a favorite. It's more of like, that's more of what I really understand and know. And I feel like having the lived experience is very helpful for people who come in and are struggling. I think it's just different if you have a specialist who's been there and knows all the nuances. There's a certain language to eating disorders, but certainly I really enjoy working with couples. I think that is, it's a good balance, I think. So
I agree. I think it's very interesting, as coaches, we teach what we've been learning ourselves, right? Throughout all of our own training and our own falls and getting back up and learning how to handle things. It's through experience, not only training, not only getting the master's degree and the PhD or whatever training or certification, it's you've experienced it. So you can empathize. You have empathy for your clients and aren't talking at them, but talking to them and talking with them.
Yeah, and there's this level of understanding, I think, too, just really picking up on the nuances in the language. Like for anyone who's listening who maybe has struggled with an eating disorder, I think you know what I mean, but there's we call it the ED voice, the eating disorder voice. It's very nuanced and it's different than anything else. And so, it's interesting when I'll have patients and I'll say, oh, this is what ED says, or and it almost sounds like to hear it and to say it out loud, it's you'd have to almost have lived it to understand that, that's what's going on with somebody. And I don't know how better else to explain it, but it's the absence of that voice when you know that you're in recovery. So.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So it's a voice in our heads telling us what is that voice telling us?
Well, all sorts of things. And it's not like a hallucination voice. So let me just
Right.
get that straight,
No,
right?
it's a our mind has a million thoughts, or they say, 10,000 thoughts a day. So I'm guessing it's one of those, but it's a recurring, unfortunate pattern of thinking, right?
Yes. So for an example, there could be something like, oh gosh, if I didn't work out today, I can't eat dinner, or this feeling of intense like anxiety and guilt if you didn't follow a certain ritual or routine that whatever. Everyone's got their own eating disorder rituals, routines, rules and things like that. If you don't follow them, like there's this like inner penance that goes on. It's like, okay, now I have to compensate by doing XYZ. It's very like punishing, and it's almost like I have to earn my food by exercising, or I don't get to eat this if I didn't do that, or it's just a lot of, okay, I've got to go body check. I've got to go weigh myself. I got to check and make sure I'm okay. And, if the number goes up, like even, a quarter of a pound, it's this berating voice of like, oh, you screwed up. What'd you do? If it goes down, it's like the mood for the day is like uplifted. And, there's so many things that go on that if you aren't someone who's experienced it really is like, wait, how does a quarter of a pound on the scale like impact your mood for the rest of the day, or impact how much you eat the rest of the day, or make you feel like you have to go to the gym for X number of minutes or whatever it is? Or for instance, like with me, I'll give an example. Like a workout didn't count unless it was exactly X number of minutes. If it was like 1 minute less, it didn't count. Like all of these things that just now I look back and go, wow, that was a lot. Like, it's all consuming.
It's so interesting because I had mentioned earlier to you offline that I wrote or created a program called Body Mind Connection, and it's all about weight loss, body image, healthy eating, exercise, etc., and using holistic tools to support you in maintaining a weight that you feel comfortable with. And for me, my story was I was in the performing arts in New York City, and I was never skinny enough, never young enough, never tall enough, never blonde enough. This was, decades ago, and it just didn't matter. And so I started on my health kick then, because the women I worked with in the theater and dance and the stage, and they were not healthy. I witnessed bulimia, and not anorexia, but a lot of bulimia. And like you said, just not allowing yourself to eat and just starving, and becoming re really unhealthy, and just having such an unhealthy image of yourself. And so in my studies, I put together the program, but most of the women who And they were almost all women, a couple of men, brave men, because I think it's bravery to step up and say, I'm seeking help. I want to better myself. And so everyone who does step up, it's not saying I failed. It's saying I want to get better. I want to be better. I want to be happy. But anyway, where I'm going with this, because it's a question for you. A lot of, I call them my big girls. I got a lot of big girls. And then every now and then I'd get a very thin girl. And it was very different. And my big girls, a lot of it was very, it started from their family. Just food was love. Food was love. Food was everything. And a lot of closet eaters, like literally in the closet eating. So have you worked with the big girls, or more, or the people coming to you are the ones who are more stressed out about that extra pound and staying in shape kind of thing?
So when you say, no, excuse me, if like terminology wise. So when you say big girls, can you kind of clarify that for me?
Like over 200 pounds, three.
So someone in a larger body. Okay.
Obese.
Okay. And again, and like in my field, like we tend not to use the word obese because it has a lot of derogatory
That's
terminology,
why, and
right?
I love them. So that's why I say my big girls. I love them, and they exercise, Anyway.
It's not really about size per se. It's more of the mentality and the mind of, again, there's a lot of body dysmorphia. People can't really see themselves accurately, and it's more of the mindset and the emotional the emotions behind it. And so it's not, you can't look at anybody and know what eating disorder they have. So people come in all shapes and sizes, and I know that the medical field in particular has like perpetuated this myth that like if you're in a larger body, you're unhealthy, and if you're in a smaller body, you're healthy, and it's perpetuated in the diet and beauty industry as well. And I know there's a lot of myths out there that, oh, people in larger bodies must have binge eating disorder, and people in smaller bodies must have anorexia nervosa. And that's just not true. It's all across the board. And to, you know, it's even people say, oh, atypical anorexia is not a thing. It can't exist. So when someone in the larger body can't possibly have anorexia nervosa, but they do. And so, it, like I said, it's all across the board. And so people aren't really coming to me. We don't promote weight loss because that's the whole impetus, I think. People start on a diet, and once you start on a diet, it's kind of like the first thing that happens when you lose weight. I hear this all the time. Oh my gosh, it felt so good the first time I got a compliment. You look great, right? It was like this big dopamine hit. And it's not that everyone who starts a diet is going to get an eating disorder, but it's almost like for people who end up with an eating disorder, that was like the starting point, right? So, and we don't focus on weight loss as part of treatment because the focus needs to be off of the body and the weight itself. It's more of like inside is what matters, right? My worth, my value, who I am as a person is on the inside because so much of the eating disorder is focused on the external, the numbers, the size, what's on the scale, all of those things. It's like chasing something. And that's part of the disorder. I think like that's what matters. That's what's going to give me value and worth. And then when those numbers aren't what they want it to be, or they don't reach those numbers, it's, oh, I'm not good enough. I screwed up. I failed. And then you get to these extreme behaviors trying to like chase some number your body's not meant to be at. So it's really to your point, like sometimes people are in really small bodies and they're not healthy, right? They're really ill and sick. And so it's more of like, where does this person's body, like when you're eating, when you're hungry, and you're stopping when you're no longer hungry. You're not eating, for emotional reasons. You're eating for fuel and nutrition. And yes, people who don't have eating disorders eat for all other sorts of reasons, right? Like social, or I just because I want it or I'm craving it. But when it gets to disordered eating, it's a whole different level. Like there's a line that gets crossed, like for distraction, for coping, for punishment, for all sorts of other things.
Wow, it's really interesting. So I'm curious about your psychology. So I'm in the holistic world, as you know, and I lead mindfulness trainings and meditations and energy healing and the educational program around loving your body, etc. And I'm familiar with the psychology world, and there are different types of psychologies out there today. And I'm curious, when you have a client like this, do you just do the listening? What is that called? The oh gosh, where it's just talking. Or you just listen as a therapist, or do you work with them and help them create the tools they need? I don't know. What's like, what do you do? How do you help your clients? And there's nothing wrong with any of it. I'm just curious because I'll give you an example. Like there are all these new therapies out there. There's like you take a what is it like some kind of hallucinogen that you can take now that's supposed to heal you or something. It's not for me, but some people seem to love it. Brain spotting is something that I'm familiar with and absolutely love. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So it goes beyond the, and forgive me because I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I can't remember the name of the classic psychology structure where someone comes in and they talk a lot and you listen. What is that
Oh,
called?
psychoanalysis.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Yeah, that's more like Freudian, kind of just free association, and that's more of that. But I think with anybody who comes in, of course, I want to hear their story and I want to hear what's going on with them, and I want them to feel like they have a safe place to express themselves, right? And so it's important to look at each person as their own unique individual. I don't want to ever put like cookie cutter therapy or treatment on somebody. That's like manualized treatment. Like, to me, that's not going to fly, right? It's like they're coming to me because I want to tailor their sessions and their treatment to what they need. And so it's important for me to listen to like what's going on with them, their unique story, their history, and to feel heard. And I want to know what's triggering them. I want to know why they're coping. I want to know how they got to this place and what their goals are. And certainly there is treatment. So yes, I mean, just like any doctor you go to, we have a set of symptoms, we can diagnose you, and then there's a treatment plan, and then, we follow that, and then hopefully the absence of symptoms, like as I mentioned before, means, you're progressing. And with eating disorders, it's not this linear line, not like a broken leg where like you put a cast on 8 weeks later, it's off, like done. It's, all over the place. And I think for people, that's really sometimes difficult because they're like, wait, when is this over? When is it going to be done? And it's like, you feel like you get, five steps ahead. And sometimes you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm falling behind, I'm relapsing. But you never really go backwards. It's just that, like, more things will come up. It's like peeling an onion, right? And it just feels like you're unearthing all of these things. And so, depending on how long people have been doing this or having their eating disorder, it can be years. So we would say like it's really beneficial if you can get diagnosed earlier on in your disorder because the prognosis is much better. So
Oh, good. Okay.
I don't know if that answered your question, but yes, there's definitely a, like a treatment plan.
No, so there's like three steps, sort of, is what I heard. They tell you your story, you create a safe place, you diagnose them, and then give them a treatment plan. So, yeah, ideal. Yeah. And it's best to be, it makes sense. But it's never too late.
Never. Oh no. Gosh, no. Never. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't trying to say like, oh, if you didn't come in earlier, like you're doomed. Not at all. I was just saying that because sometimes people hesitate and hesitate and hesitate. And I just really encourage people. I know to your point, what you said, it's really brave to step up and say, I need help. Right. And I think especially in the field of psychology, like asking for mental health, there's still a stigma, unfortunately, I think for a lot of people, about going in and getting help. A lot of people will go to their, pediatricians, they'll go to their primary care doctors first instead of coming to a specialist like myself. And sometimes that's detrimental because they'll work on, it's important to get the medical stuff looked at, labs, things like that, because they do affect the body, but the psychological part's really the crux of treatment.
I agree. I think that is true in any illness, that what we think we create. And if we're filled with negativities or toxic thoughts, or and it doesn't even have to be like that, just thoughts that aren't positive, thoughts that aren't supportive, that aren't helpful, they can start burrowing into your body and creating illness.
Oh,
I'm
totally.
sure there's a better way to say that. But yeah, I do. I truly believe our thoughts create a reality, and more doctors and specialists are seeing that. It's stress, stress, stress. And so what is the root of the stress? And that's what I heard you say, is I want to know what the triggers are. Where is that trauma? What is that pain point that sets you off into indulging, and then you're just going to hurt yourself and beat yourself up for it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, stress is a huge, I mean, I've been in this field like going on 3 decades now, which is like how I'm aging myself. But I mean, across the board, I can say stress is the number one thing that really has an impact on your physical body. And so I'm a big proponent at really looking at what are people's stressors and how are they managing it. And, having a bunch of cortisol running through your body is going to wreak havoc. It's just, if nothing else, I think if people want to come in to talk to somebody and get some healing about their stress level and really looking at where that's coming from, like to your point, what are the thoughts contributing to the stress? How are they looking at the world? What is their perspective on things? And sometimes they have really faulty thought patterns they're not aware of.
And yeah, I agree with that. And coaching is very similar. It's very much aligned with therapy. It's about almost all therapy. I mean, sorry, almost all coaching is about shifting mindsets. And it's understanding what that mindset is, where it originated, often in childhood, or who knows, something happened, and all of a sudden you have this belief system that may have even worked for you then, but it doesn't work for you anymore. And it's time to just let it go and be okay with it and move on. Can you give some tips to the audience who do feel like they may be suffering or dealing with a food disorder, an eating disorder? What can they do to recognize that? How do they know? How does a person know?
So if, I'll ask somebody like how much of your day spent thinking about food, your weight, exercise, and if somebody says like, "Oh my gosh, I think about it like all day long, like 80%." I'm like, "Okay, there's a clue right there." Like if you are skipping events, if you are trying to fit in your exercise, your meals, your eating disorder behaviors. What I mean by that is like you have to count your calories or whatever it is. Like, for example, I have people say, like, oh, I skip class to make it to the gym, or I'm getting 5 hours of sleep, to make sure I get to the gym before I do anything else in the day, or I missed, this big event because I didn't feel like I looked good enough and I made it to the gym instead, or whatever it is, or you can't go on vacation unless the hotel has a gym or things like that, where it's like everything revolves around like making sure you fit in whatever rituals, routines, or you can't go to a restaurant because you're freaked out about like what's going to be on the menu, or you don't want people watching you eat, things like that. Just really start to like take stock of how much of your day's really spent thinking about like what you look like, what you're eating. Like I call it mental math, like mental math about like, oh gosh, if I go over this number or eat this much, it's too much. Or, if you eat a certain food, do you like punish yourself and then say, oh, I can't eat dessert later or whatever it is. Like there's these, I call it negotiating with the eating disorder. It's like, oh, I had carbs in the morning, so now I can't have carbs later or whatever it is. If you're doing a lot of negotiating in your mind, there's like a line that got crossed.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part because some of what I'm hearing you say makes sense to me. Like, well, if I have carbs in the morning, maybe I don't want to have carbs at night. But where, how, and that's, this is true, I think, in almost every aspect of life. There's always a line, a thin line that gets crossed where something goes from moderation to extreme. And so, some of what I'm hearing, I understand it's extreme, but so what I think, so I'm bear with me, everyone, while I'm grasping this. Maybe you're trying to grasp it too. If 80% of your thoughts throughout the day are about this, that's like a big, huge flag saying, yeah, if you're focusing that much of your time, giving that much energy on food and appearance, etc., and then it's time to seek someone like you. So yeah, someone like Dr. Christina Castagnini. So in our last few minutes, is there anything else you would like to share?
I just, there's so many things out there in social media that I see that are just these glaring, like, perpetuations of our toxic diet culture. And I don't know how to combat it because I think a lot of times I'll hear people talk and it's like, oh, that's just quote unquote like common knowledge, but it's really disordered. Like, I think I'd mentioned it before, like equating being in a smaller body with being healthy. You can't look at anybody and know their state of health. And I think there's always this like shock when people find out like someone in, a larger body is like, it doesn't have high cholesterol and hypertension. And like, there's nothing, like, there's no illness. There's an absence of, right? And it's like, but yet, people who are in smaller bodies maybe genetically aren't meant to be in that smaller body, and they're doing a lot of very harmful things to be in that smaller body. They're malnourished, they're not eating enough, they're not sleeping enough, they're, starving themselves. Maybe they're throwing up everything after they eat, they're doing diet pills, they're doing all these things, and it's like, but everyone's saying, oh, good job, you're in this BMI category, you're healthy, right? And it's like this false sense of health, and it's hard to let go of that sometimes because, like, well, everyone's telling me I'm so healthy. And that can be hard because it's like, well, what if I stop doing these things? Then what? Especially when our society is such a proponent of like being in a smaller body and telling everybody if you aren't in this smaller body, you're not healthy, you're not doing the right things. So I just want to put that out there.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And it reminds me of the Dove commercials. I don't know if they still have them, but the company that creates the Dove soaps and cleansers, I guess, for a while, and they would have show all different sized women, and it was beautiful. I just loved that so much. It's like every body is different. There are different shapes and different, like some have hourglass figures, some don't. And neither is bad, neither is good. It's your body. And how do you nourish her? Nourish her with love and care, self-care, really. And I think I'm a strong proponent of therapy, and I think and coaching and self development, personal development, et cetera. And do as much as you can to take care of yourself, because as my mother used to say, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything.
It's true.
And our mental health is a huge part of our physical health. It's not one or the other, they're together.
Absolutely. Yes.
Christina, I believe you have a free gift for everybody.
Yes, so I have a 9-week e-course for anyone who is questioning, like, gosh, do I have disordered eating? Like, should I see a specialist? I'm like, where am I at with things? And it's not gonna like give you a diagnosis at the end, but what it will do is help you explore for yourself, like, what is my relationship with food, my body, and maybe help you get to that point where you're saying, okay, maybe I do want to seek help or seek a diagnosis or treatment. And so it comes once a week, and it's just some questions for you, some exploratory things for you to really delve in and maybe do some introspection. So I do have that on my website for anyone who would like that.
Oh, I love it. So everyone, you can find this free gift, very generous of you, Dr. Christina, in the show notes. The links will be there, and social media links to connect with Christina and learn more from her wisdom. And let's see, we are creating abundance, and I'm happy to announce that my book called Creating Abundance will be published shortly. So join the journey, and there's a full chapter all about, well, very similar to what Dr. Christine and I just talked about. But thank you for being such a delightful guest, and I look forward to seeing you again in person. And the best to everyone. Know you are worth it. You are so, so worth it.